So today is January 14th, 2024. And tomorrow is January 15th. It's the anniversary, the birth anniversary of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, who was taken away from us unexpectedly. Well, unfortunately, on in 1968, I believe. And tomorrow, the 15th, is also the anniversary of honoring him in the United States, with a holiday, a federal holiday. But I'm understanding that there are other countries also that pay some attention to this day of honoring, which is wonderful. And so I was doing a little bit of reading on Dr. King and thinking it'd be wonderful today for us to really invite an ancestor King into our midst to remind us about some of his deep teachings. As we know, Dr. King was the, some call the preeminent leader of the African American Civil Rights Movement, along with many others who, because of the collective energy that he organized, was able to really bring forth different huge changes. And still, we live in a time where we don't have equity for African Americans. And what we don't have, which I find really even more compelling, is we don't have love for each other. One of the books of Dr. King that is my all-time favorite is this book, The Strength to Love. I find it so deep, and every time I read it, I think I haven't read it before, but I have many times. I've written about it. I've really studied this book. And still, when I read it, I find myself thinking, wow, I must have missed that last time. Because when you read this book, you really, for me, you understand that at the root of what Dr. King was teaching was love. And that it without love, that nothing around change would happen. That justice could not happen without love. That was his deep teaching. And I think that's why it's one of my most favorite books of his, is because he makes no apology for this very deep truth. And so I thought it would be wonderful today to honor his memory, his legacy. And so there's different pieces from this book that I pulled out that I'll share. As far as what he felt it would be required to build a beloved community. Because that's what he said was needed. That without this community, this beloved community, people engaging together in a nonviolent way, that we wouldn't have justice, that we wouldn't have equity for African Americans or anyone, that there needed to be all the things possible in the human heart to become whole again in order to build this kind of beloved community. And that through that, there would be this huge transformation where we as people, as human beings, would then be able to change these hearts that were causing oppression. I've pulled, like I said, some pieces, but there's so much, you know, as I kept looking through it, I was like, oh, I should read this. Oh, I should read this. But, you know, then I'd end up reading the whole book, and we can't do that. So I mix and match what I felt would help us remember him and the root of his teaching. So there were three things that I found repeated in different ways of what does it take to build this beloved community? And these three things that he names are faith, hope, and love. So Dr. King was a man of faith. If you read his speeches and what he put to writing, he continuously and persistently and consistently reflects back to Jesus and God, that without this faith that he had, everything comes back to faith. So I'll read you a part here where he says, history is replete with the bleached bones of nations that refuse to listen to him. Him meaning Jesus. May we in the 20th century hear and follow his words before it is too late. May we solemnly realize that we shall never be true sons of our Heavenly Father until we love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. And then there's several quotes about from the Bible. So Dr. King was a man of faith, and he let faith drive his seeking of justice, this undeniable understanding that everyone deserves to be free, and what's the way to get there? What's the way to get the freedom? So for him, it was based in this faith, this deep faith. And he calls and he references the answer to this beloved community by continuously referring to his faith in Jesus, continuously referring to the way Jesus moved in the world, continuously referring to the understanding that everything is the way Jesus did it. So he had such a deep faith. And so that faith was, in his case, a faith in a Christian God. And in Buddhism, we too have faith, right? We have faith in the understanding that in us there is something most beautiful and precious, most truthful, and that we can rediscover, we can nurture that. And when that comes to being, we are in this space of understanding and love, right? And so it's the same thing, right? We don't have to be Christians or Muslim or of a different faith. When we really look at what is it that this, what is it a faith in? It's a faith in this understanding that we are able to be our most true selves, and that this true self acted in this way. And in the example of Christianity, is it acted in the way of that Jesus acted, right? In Buddhism, what we practice is what the Buddha taught as a way to awakening into what? Awakening into understanding and love, right? Again, that we have this in us. And so we don't worship a God in Buddhism, but what we pay attention to and we try to emulate is the teachings of a person who woke up to that wholesomeness, to that heart of love, to that perfect understanding. And so we practice with faith too, In fact, it's the when we in Buddhism, when we talk about the five powers, faith is the first power, right? And then the second one that Dr. King said was necessary, or a thing, or a practice, behavior, belief necessary, was hope. That we have to have hope, that without hope, we sort of lose ourselves, because hope allows us to keep practicing even when things seem like, oh my gosh, there's nothing else we can do. This is just, you know, the word, this is just hopeless, right? When we say things like that, it's a sense of there's nothing that we can do. And so this hope is that there's always something we can do, right? There's always a way forward. There's always something else that we can do, right? Dr. King wrote, but even in the inevitable moments when all seem hopeless, men know that without hope, they cannot really live. And in agonizing desperation, they cry for the bread of hope. So, in Buddhism, there's not really a word that gets translated as hope. And so interestingly, I just a couple weeks ago attended a talk on hope, and the name of the talk was Hope in Stressful Times by they were mostly, I think, Theravada practitioners, yeah. And these were also teachers who had studied the original teachings in the language of Pali and in the language of Sanskrit. And there's other languages too. But they couldn't find a word that was translated into English as hope. But what they understood, or the way they interpreted its teachings, is that there was always this intention in all the teachings that there was a way to develop the wholesome qualities in us, in ourselves, that there was always this intention and this knowing that if we practice, we will achieve this. If we practice the, let's say, the Noble Eightfold Path, the Seven Factors of Enlightenment, the precepts, which we call the Five Mindfulness Trainings in Buddhism, in our tradition, that if we practice like this, that we would attain this awakening, this freedom, this love, and this understanding. And so what the teachers suggested was that the closest that we could come to understanding hope was in this way, understanding and interpreting the teachings as all being hopeful, as all giving us this hope that if we did this, we too could awaken. If we practice generosity, if we practice renunciation, where we live a simple life and reduce our possessions, if we meditate, if we study the readings, if we would become wise, if we practice with patience and sincerity, loving kindness, that if we did these things, that it would bring us to this awakening, right? This perfect understanding, nirvana, if you will, right? And so they interpreted hope in this English language, as we understand it, to be this, all these practices that lead us and that gives us hope. Because if we didn't think, or if we didn't hope that this would be helpful, we wouldn't practice it. So in Buddhism too, we have this understanding of a hope, or an aspiration, right? Aspiration. So in Buddhism, we do use aspiration a lot. There's a lot of translation of the word from that word from Sanskrit and Pali of aspiring forward, right? We aspire to become more compassionate because we believe it will result in our hearts opening, right? So we remain hopeful. We hope that if we practice with loving kindness and compassion and joy for others, happiness, that it'll open our hearts. Yeah. So we too also practice with hope in Buddhism. The third thing that Dr. King said would help us to, that would take the beloved community is love, is what we started with, love. And so what he says is that everybody wishes to love and be loved. He who feels that he is not loved feels that he does not count. And that much has happened in the modern world to make men feel that they do not belong. And so this understanding is that we need love. We need love. And so he gets into love, right? There's three kinds of love that he has talked about. Because he didn't want to confuse love, and I'll read directly his quote is the meaning of love is not to be confused with some sentimental outpouring. Love is something much deeper than emotional bosh, right? Right. And in other texts, he's written that this is not an anemic kind of love, right? And then he uses the Greek New Testament to help him define for us three words that we use or we can ways we can sometimes interpret love. The first one is what he calls eros, yearning of the soul. For the realm of the divine, romantic love, right? That love as, oh, my heart is made full by this person, the seeking of the divine. That's one kind of love. And the second one is filial love, right? The love of reciprocal love, the one of I love this person because I like them, and because they like me and they love me. So this is like friendship, affection between friends, family. This kind of, when we think of filial love, we think of that second kind of love. The love, though, that he's talking about in order to build this community, this beloved community, is agape, which is understanding the redemptive love for people, a love that doesn't seek anything in return. What he says is the love of God operating in the human heart. That's what he's calling that kind of love. We love, in his words, we love the person who does an evil deed, although we hate the deed that he does. Right. I'm going to repeat that. We love the person who does an evil deed, although we hate the deed that he does. What else does he say? He says, love your enemies, do not like your enemies. Because he says, like is a sentimental and affectionate word. So this is interesting, right? Like is a sentimental and affectionate word. And he goes on to say in the book that it's hard even to like people that you love. And we've shared about this in Sangha before, right? And yet we want to still love them because even though we may not like them, right? So this understanding of what love is, the love of God operating in the human heart. Okay. I want to mention here what he talks about. How do you love your enemies? Right? Because he definitely spoke many, many times about loving our enemies. So, how do we love our enemies? And there's three ways he suggests this. Number one, we develop and maintain the capacity to forgive. And he goes on to say, he who is devoid of the power to forgive is devoid of the power to love. He who is devoid of the power to forgive is devoid of the power to love. So this is a hard one, right? And he specifically speaks to the need for those who are oppressed to initiate this process of loving. And then he speaks about forgiveness. He says, forgiveness does not mean ignoring what has been done or putting a false label on an evil act. The degree to which we are able to forgive determines the degree to which we are able to love our enemies, right? So I'm going to repeat that. The degree to which we are able to forgive determines the degree to which we are able to love our enemies. In Buddhism, this forgiveness is an interesting term, and the way Buddhism speaks about forgiveness, there are places where there are clear teachings about forgiving, and then there are places that teaches that when you come to understand the reason that people behave they do, especially when they cause harm, it removes the need to forgive. So forgiveness falls away, that as a part of the process of loving, because now we understand. So in Buddhism, we understand, especially in our tradition, we understand that this awakening is an awakening to understanding and love, because when you understand, you don't have to forgive, because the understanding opens up, like opens your eyes to what happened. And in that opening, it removes the thorn that's embedded in the heart. And then it then transforms the heart in such a way that it opens again and it becomes more spacious. The second thing that Dr. King says about how do we love our enemies, that we must recognize that the evil deed of the enemy neighbor, the thing that hurts, never quite expresses all that he is, right? Yeah, because that's just one aspect of who they are. And when we go to hate, we miss the other part of this person's humanity. So they're not basically, and this is the same teaching in Buddhism, we are more than just one emotion. Aren't we always talking about that? I am more than my anger. And I'm also more than my joy. Right? Because sometimes when that moment of joy passes, especially if we feel someone's taken it away from us, there's another part of us that shows itself. And so that's what he's saying right here. We must recognize that the evil deed of the enemy, and I would even challenge us to say the evil deed of our own selves, right? The thing that hurts us, because when we do evil, we hurt ourselves too, not just someone else. That evil deed of ourselves never quite expresses all that we are. And if we believe that, then we can also understand that the evil deed of another is not only who they are. And so Buddhism is very clear on this. It's very, very clear. This understanding that we're not just the emotion that we find ourselves taken up or absorbed in, that we are more than that. Hence that we say, that the mud and the lotus is there together. The difficulty is right there next to the thing that makes us transform, right? And the third thing Dr. King says is we must not seek to defeat or humiliate the enemy, but to win his friendship and understanding. Yeah. And he talks a lot about when there comes that opportunity for revenge, to humiliate, to show up the way the oppressor has caused harm. What do we do when that opportunity presents itself to us? Do we step into it? Or do we try for understanding? Because it's that understanding that leads to the love. Right? So we do not seek to defeat or humiliate the person who is causing. Instead, we seek to befriend. Right? And he says it clear here. To win his friendship and understanding. Again, this is very Buddhist, right? It's very much part of what Buddhism teaches. What does Thay always say? You cannot love without understanding someone. We don't really understand, couples who have been together for many, many years, when they'll say, I've been together, we've been together this many years, and I still don't understand him, or I still don't understand her. And so there's always this continuous way that we seek to understand each other so that we can really love them. Not love the person we want them to be, but love who they really are. This just a deeper level of understanding someone that brings us to be able to love when they do things that might hurt us, right? I think I want to close with the last thing I think that's important is why we love. Why do we love? So we talked about what is it that's needed to build this beloved community, and then how do we love our enemies, and then why do we love? And so Dr. King offers us three reasons why we love. Number one, returning hate for hate multiplies hate. These are his words. Returning hate for hate multiplies hate. That's pretty clear, right? Right. If you have the energy of hate, you put another energy of hate next to it, it's a bigger energy of hate. So we're growing the thing. We're multiplying this thing, right? That's why we in Buddhism practice so much loving kindness. The Brahma Viharas, we practice loving kindness because we're always filling up the cup of the world with love and kindness to help to dilute the hatred that's there. Right? His second reason why we love is the hate scars the soul and distorts the personality. Hate scars the soul and distorts the personality. I think that's self-evident for us if we ever notice. When we're really mad and we have revenge in our hearts, how we act completely different out of our personality that we maybe most used to being with, right? Because our heart gets tight, it gets narrow, it's not spacious anymore. Right? And the third reason we love is it's love, Dr. King's words, love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend. Love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend. And I was reflecting on this because it's not deep. I mean, these are all very deep teachings. What I mean is that the opportunity for us to act into these teachings, it's not deep actually, it's very simple. The other day, I don't know where I was, it must have been in a store, but the service person was not happy with me for some reason. I'm not sure what I did or what I didn't do, but and all I did was say a few kind sentences to the person, and I watched them. Their face opened up, they smiled, and they shifted. I felt their whole energy toward me just shifted. Now, this was a person like a minute before, like they were not interested in having a word with me, money or no money. And just two sentences, right? And they're, everything shifted. So this kindness, this loving kindness that we practice, this, you know, when we offer the merit of our practice that people's hearts get touched, this is a real energy that is transformative. And if you don't believe me, just go out. And I know you've seen it and you've practiced it. Just go out. Someone who's in a bad mood even, right? They're harboring something, not towards you necessarily. Just like that service person, could have had nothing to do with me. I don't know, you know. But what was important to me was, how am I going to show up in this situation? Am I going to bounce off that energy that they have there, or am I going to stay in my heart space? And it was so amazing to see the shift in them. Now, granted, you know, maybe after I left there, they went right back to the place they were in. But we can only be present to what's in front of us. We can be responsible for how we show up. And are we going to show up with love? Are we going to show up with these other emotions that take us away from this true nature of who we are, which is big-hearted spaciousness? And I'll close with this very last sentence that is also from Dr. King. There will be no permanent solution to the race problem until oppressed men develop the capacity to love their enemies. Now, that's a very deep, deep teaching there. And maybe we can explore that in our Dharma sharing. So thank you for listening. And let's invite a sound of bell and let all this fall away.